Hello everyone and welcome to the next edition of the VTX podcast. Here at the Veterinary Thought Exchange, we like to start by asking what are you thinking? And this week we're going to be thinking about feline lower urinary tract diseases. In our Just a Thought episode, we're going to be chatting through some clinical conundrums with the amazing Sam Taylor. And this week our focus really is on some new guidelines for feline lower urinary tract diseases, a bit of a mouthful, but focusing very much on the question of, you know, should we be using prazosin in our blocked cats? So I'm excited to be joined by Sam Taylor for that conversation today.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
What are the blocked cats blocked with?
This is one of my favorite things.
I don't understand.
No, I know. Well, what do you think?
Is it we?
Well, I mean, yes, it's we. The we can't come out. That's the problem.
Right.
But what's interesting is, so you know, usually male cats, and so something is blocking their urethra and stopping the wee coming out, right?
Okay.
I think that can be little stones or, you know, inflammation or whatever, but a lot of it is actually a stress response in the urethra spasms. And so it's almost like generally, you know, us manifesting stress by biting our nails or needing to have a drink or, you know, like, I don't know how people manifest stress, but cats are literally
getting blocked. Okay.
And
I understand that's
what's happening. So there you go.
I mean, I learn something new every day here.
Every single time. Okay, so Sam, thanks again for joining us for our clinical segment. And we're really excited about you being involved in the launch of some new guidelines for the diagnosis and management of lower urinary tract disease in cats. Everyone has to check them out, and we'll put the link for those in the show notes for the podcast. I wonder, before we kind of answer our just a thought question,
yeah,
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what we kind of call this disease. So we talk about lower urinary tract disease or feline idiopathic cystitis or FLUT. Like what should we be calling it? What are we calling it nowadays?
Well, yes, exactly. And we made some quite deliberate things in these guidelines. So they are guidelines for the diagnosis and management of lower urinary tract diseases with an S. And I'll tell you why that's important, because FLUTD, as you say, FLUTD, F-L-U-T-D, that's not a diagnosis. Okay, it's a group of clinical signs: hematuria, dysuria, strenguria, classic clinical signs, but they can be caused by many different diseases. So we really need to get away from thinking that feline lower urinary tract disease is a thing. It isn't a thing. They can get urolithiasis, they can get urinary tract infection, they very commonly get idiopathic cystitis. And so it's just thinking about it a little bit differently from that point of view, that we've still got to investigate them. We've still got to find out what's causing it. And then on the feline idiopathic cystitis front, whether that's the right name, because I was very lucky to work with Tony Buffington on these guidelines, who's this kind of genius of lower urinary tract diseases. And he says that FIC is the bladder's expression of a systemic stress disorder. Okay, so it's basically the whole cat is stressed, and you could get diarrhea, you could get vomiting, you could get dermatological signs. But in some cats, their Achilles heel is their bladder, and you get those signs. So, yeah, it's about thinking about lower urinary tract disease as a group of diseases that might have some quite common presenting signs, but we've still got to work them up, and they can be caused by different things on different occasions. And then thinking about idiopathic cystitis really just as that unhappy bladder, but as part of a whole cat problem that often comes from directly from their brain. So we actually wonder if we should call FIC something like bladder pain syndrome, something like that, to make it more of a syndrome than a primary bladder wall issue.
Yeah. Who decides whether you get to rename something? Who actually decides that?
Well, this... This is really interesting. Nobody really. That's what I've discovered, because I actually think FIP is a wrong name as well. And it seems that nobody decides. It's a bit like these things that sort of just get passed down kind of thing. And obviously some great, fantastic researchers from, 20 years ago termed some of these conditions. But if they're not the right name, it's a very good question, Scott. How do we change the name of a
I
disease?
thought there must be someone, maybe who's in charge of naming stuff. That's interesting. We just so do we just we literally can just decide to do it and it just happens. If you
Seems so, yeah.
Okay,
It
good
seems
to know. Good to know. That's interesting.
seems so. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting, interesting. Well, listen, so we obviously want everyone to check out the guidelines. I want to the question we
Thank you.
want to answer today is just one tiny part of this. So I don't want to oversimplify, but I do want to make sure that we're kind of just making things easy for people to digest, particularly women that we're listening to our CPD maybe through our podcast. So the question is, should we be using prazosin in our feline patients that have feline lower urinary tract diseases, but particularly, I suppose, idiopathic cystitis or bladder pain syndrome? So those cases where probably they don't have urolithiasis, they don't have bladder infection, or bacterial cystitis, and it probably is that idiopathic thing where it's related to stress or whatever. Should we be using prazosin in those cases, which is a drug that we've used for quite some time, I think, thinking that it was, beneficial for these patients?
And I know you want me to answer concisely, and that is quite challenging with this particular question. The answer is that the evidence would suggest not. So if you look at the published papers, it would suggest that prazosin does not benefit cats. Now we're talking about block cats here. It hasn't been studied in other situations, but if we look at block cats, there is no evidence of benefit of using prazosin. However, and the however is important, is that those studies use some different methodology, some different dosages, different kind of ways of treating patients. Obviously, really hard to study because every cat is different and might have been treated differently. So, bearing that in mind, we don't have that evidence. But I personally feel that there are individual cats that could potentially benefit from treatment with prazosin, particularly if they have urethral spasm. So, as you said, there's no other evidence. They were easy to unblock. There's no urolith there, or etc. I think we shouldn't write that drug off completely, but I don't think we should blanket prescribe it to every patient. So, I think it's on an individual case. And of course, block cats are stressed cats, and if they're very difficult to give tablets to, that would also influence my decision to prescribe, because they don't need more medications being given. So the answer is that we don't have strong evidence to support the use of prazosin, but in some individual cats, the general feeling is there could be some benefit. But I think that feeds back to what I said, that this is not a disease that's the same in every patient. So we can't have a prescriptive treatment protocol for every single patient. It's going to vary. So I don't know if I did answer your question or not.
No, I think that was kind of the answer that I wanted, because I think that for me there was that thing happened where those papers were published, and it one of them was basically like, actually, if you give prazosin, you're actually going to make the whole thing worse, sort of vibe. There was this, I think that
Yeah,
there was
yeah.
definitely a lot of kind of
Quite a
head.
provocative title. Quite a
Yeah,
provocative title. Yeah.
100%. So we've got a paper who, if you just read the headline, you're actually never going to give prazosin again. And I do think that, there was a lot of discussion about, like you said, methodology, but also, how those drugs that were given, how they were weaned or not,
Yes,
and different,
exactly.
different things. So I think that's kind of, I think, important that people are not shut off to the idea that these drugs might be helpful in some cases. As far as, I suppose the drugs that we have available, and again, we're probably talking about the cases that are idiopathic, if we're still using that term, although I think we're going to have to make up a new term as per the guidelines, that you can just make up new terms. what would you say drug-wise has kind of come into the arena that is maybe different from what we did previously and potentially more helpful in these sorts of cases?
Yeah, so I think gabapentin is probably pretty useful, would come in that sphere. We know it also has a potentially anxiolytic effect, which is not a bad thing for these guys. And if we think about it being a neuropathic kind of analgesic, I don't have any evidence for this, but I have anecdotally found it helpful both in the clinic and outside the clinic, as in kind of smoothing that transition home during flare-ups and things like that. So I've got a little cat that I treat at the moment who has FIC, and he is so sensitive that if not too long ago a leaf blew off a tree into his face and that gave him hematuria. So he's so sensitive. The leaf upset him and that went straight to his bladder, you see, because he's got this programmed kind of, you know, response to stress that goes straight to his bladder. So for him, you know, when a leaf blows in his face, if we start some gabapentin, we can stop an episode happening. And he actually hasn't blocked for a long time now. We'll also use some non-steroidals as well. So I think gabapentin. And then one thing that's really interesting, and I'm not advocating this, but I think it will be really interesting to study, is drugs like Solensia, as far as use in diseases like idiopathic cystitis. So I say I'm not advocating our listeners kind of go about giving Solensia to every FIC cat, but I wonder if we'll see some more developments, because we do need to think about this disease a little bit differently.
Interesting. That's really interesting. I've got an image of this little cat with the leaf blowing in his face and getting stressed. What could, just quickly for me, what does he look like? What is he I've got this idea.
He's a very, very chubby black cat.
Yeah,
he's called Monkey, and he's a very chubby black
cat. My god, I love him.
He is so cute, but he's so sensitive.
Oh, I love him and I don't even know him. So as far as you know, when we think about you know, the I think the biggest challenge for a lot of people is going to be, you know, we've got these cats, we've actually done all the bits in the clinic that we kind of feel, well, maybe okay about. We get the catheter and we unblock them, we do all that stuff, we get, you know, we give them analgesics in the clinic. I think, you know, that the question often comes down to what are we sending them home with? As far as kind of, and again, we know that one size does not fit all, but kind of what would be your top tips about now you get to leave the clinic, your bladder is unblocked, what are we kind of thinking about as far as sending them out the door and what might be kind of beneficial? We've obviously touched on the gabapentin and the prazosin, but what kind of things are useful in that kind of space?
Well, hopefully with the guidelines, we've sort of helped practitioners with this, because we all know that there's a big stress component to these cats. And I think sending them back to the same environment, we're asking for trouble, really. And so we've produced an owner guide. So I'm going to ask people to send them home with the owner guide rather than a drug necessarily, because in that we've tried to talk about litter trays and environment and, you know, perching and all kind of things to just change that home environment to improve things. So remember that a disease that has a multifactorial cause like FIC is not going to have one drug that sorts it out. It's going to have a multifactorial solution. And so that is water intake. It might be diet in some situations, and it's going to be environmental changes as well as the medications that we give. But again, our primary care colleagues are super busy. So I'm hoping that you can just give your owners the link or this document, and it will start them on that journey of thinking about what they can do at home. If we look at some research that we've done recently on number of litter trays that people have, and this has been echoed in Australia and the USA as well, is that the majority of people don't have enough litter trays. And that's that's a pretty basic one, isn't it? You know, you think that's a pretty simple one to solve. But we still get referred cases with chronic lower urinary tract diseases like FIC, and they have only got one litter tray for four cats, you know, and things like this. So there's lots of simple things that can be changed that could make quite a big difference to these little guys.
And these, and just for, you know, again, these guidelines, the owner guidelines are freely available, downloadable, yep. printable, you know, so it's it does, and they're visually pleasing. They're visually pleasing to me. So that's all very important. So that's, I think that what a brilliant resource when people are time poor and they can just print that out, you know, that's a wonderfully helpful and useful and impactful thing.
Well, we've got to be realistic, Scott. Not everyone can afford or has the time to go and have a behaviourist round, do they? And we know that there's not enough behaviourists to go round. And we all feel, I think for practitioners, that can feel really pressurizing because they kind of know they should go through all that, but they haven't really got time. And, you know, so hopefully this is not a replacement for a behaviourist, but it would maybe start that conversation and kind of try and help.
And having been part of creating these guidelines, what is the thing, what do you think the biggest thing that you've learned about feline lower urinary tract diseases is what's the biggest thing you've learned about that?
I think it really was around, I always knew that FIC wasn't just about the bladder, but reading a lot of the literature also about humans that have bladder pain syndrome. So we know that cats are kind of unique in that they have a similar condition to humans with, which I think it is called bladder pain syndrome in humans, because they recognize that it's not a purely an inflammatory bladder disease, is really around that whole cat kind of management. So when they manage people with this disease, they do sometimes use some psychotherapy and stress reduction and things, as well as changes in water intake and diet. So learning a bit more about their brains. So some cats are just, you know, like little monkey kind of programmed to, and it's probably genetic and to do with their kitten experience, they're programmed to have some lower tolerance to stress and a kind of exaggerated threat response. So he thinks that leaf is, you know, going to kill him. Whereas another cat that will never get FIC could be in a very stressful situation and, you know, isn't bothered. And I always think, do you remember recently there was this trend on social media to put a cucumber near a cat? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Weird, but where my brain went to is that some cats go, they jump up in the air, don't they, and they freak out. And I tested it with my own cat and she wasn't bothered at all. She just like sniffed it and rubbed on the cucumber, and I thought that's the difference. So those jumpy up cats are the ones that are going to get cystitis, and my cat is the one that isn't. So they're programmed, do you see what I mean, to respond to things. So what we've then got to do is reduce the cucumbers and then they might not get the bladder problem. I could be talking complete nonsense, but
is that in the guidelines?
No,
is that
like didn't one get of the through review. No.
That's incredible. I that's exactly what we need to do. Just reduce the cucumbers. Oh, I really wish that made it in. I really wish that made it in. That's sad to me. That's brilliant, but that's exactly right. And that's exactly right. And I think actually you're right. I mean, I've never tried it, but I can guarantee that if I put a cucumber down beside my cats, they wouldn't give a flying hoot.
Yeah.
Like, they just wouldn't care. Yeah. You know, like truly wouldn't care.
But the little monkeys are the cats that overreact to it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, I don't, I mean, that's us. That we can't really go get any better than that. So we'll leave it there for today. Sam Taylor, feline specialist.
That's my take home. Oh, damn. Might have gone wrong.
I love that so much. No, that's incredible. Listen, thank you so much. Massive congratulations on the guidelines.
Thank
I think
you.
They are a triumph, and as these guidelines really often are, like particularly the work that kind of ISFM and the Journal of Feline Medicine and Surgery do, like I just think really, really great
stuff. And my co-authors, I must mention my co-authors, two of them from where you are in Canada, who CERN and Serge, who are fabulous authors. Anyone should read anything they write, and so just to give them kudos as well in the guidelines.
That's great, and we'll make sure we link all of that. So thanks again for chatting, very helpful.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
So a massive thank you to Sam for chatting to us again with her immense knowledge of feline lower urinary tract diseases. Please do check out the show notes of the podcast for links to the new guidelines for for you, veterinary professionals, but also for our caregivers. So there's lots of brilliant information that really is important that you check out. So massive thank you to Sam. We are really excited to bring you these Just a Thought episodes to hopefully give you some sort of really bite-sized CPD. If there's any questions that you would like to be answered through this part of our podcast, then please do let us know. And remember to check out more of what VTX do, head over to www.vtx-cpd.com. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll see you next time.